Well, if you've been involved at all in any conversation about the term Selah, you know that everybody's confused about it. Nobody really knows what it means. But I thought I would at least touch on a few of the theories this morning. And no, it is not an expletive that David used every time he popped a string on his lyre. I've heard some musicians suggest that. But more than likely, it was a musical term, like we would see in a piece of music, fortissimo, crescendo, accelerando. Interesting, they're all Italian, isn't it? But that note showed up in the text, and everyone knew to do something. We're not exactly sure what. Some believe that it was a pause, as was used here this morning, a pause to stop, reflect on what's gone on before. And I think that's a good theory. There are times in life when we need pauses. I really needed one yesterday. I was glad Sunday came around halfway through this week. I needed a pause. Sometimes life forces pauses upon us, sometimes in unwanted ways, in unexpected ways. Perhaps it was a pause. And how much we need pauses in our worship. I grew up where we filled every moment with some sort of sound. We wanted no dead air, as they say in the broadcasting business. Silence is not necessarily dead air. When the language of God is silence, we have to get really quiet to hear anything at all. Perhaps it was a pause. Others believe it was a swell or a crescendo. And I like that too. I've been in worship services that are just very monotone. There are no dynamic markings. Not only are there no pauses or no times when things get quieter, people get really uncomfortable if there's any kind of a swell or a crescendo. We need crescendos in life. We need for all of life not to be one long fortissimo, one loud experience, deluged with sound. But crescendos make it oh so much more interesting in life. Sometimes those crescendos come unexpectedly in life. And I think in order for worship to be authentic and to reflect life, we need crescendos in our worship. We need swells in our worship as well as seasons of silence. Now, coming from a love of jazz, I love this next theory, that a Selah was a time for improvisation. I don't know how many of you are jazz fans, but the times that I've gone to hear a group of musicians play, and they get to that place of complete freewheeling improvisation, they're all within the same vocabulary, same vocabulary of harmonization, same chord progressions, or in Miles Davis's case, the same mode from time to time. There's a blueprint, there's a roadmap, and everybody's on the same roadmap, but there's all kinds of freedom for spontaneous ebb and flow. We do it every time we engage in conversation with just one other person. Certainly, we experience it when we engage with a group, with three or four or five, or in a class. I was visiting Paul Neely's class. We were going to pray for one of the students, and it was Carl. And Carl said, what we're going to do is have kind of popcorn prayer. That meant that anybody could pray as whenever you wanted to. I'd not heard that term before. But what ended up happening with the popcorn prayer, if you would, is an improvised dialogue in prayer took place. There are times in life where you've got to be prepared to improvise. And worship can be so much more rich, so much more textural, if we're willing to improvise. Don't just paint by numbers, but take what's happening in the life of your community. Take what's happening in the ebb and flow of the worship life of the community together and be ready to improvise. There's an elegance and an eloquence there. It's in the jazz world, it's what's referred to as the sound of surprise. Sometimes we need surprise in our worship. As we plan our chapel services, I try to make them fairly predictable so that they're sort of dependable and you know what you're going to get. You know where we're going next in a service. But sometimes it's good to improvise and to have some curves thrown us. I remember there was an inbreaking of joy one morning a couple of years ago. It was one of Ouida Harding's first chapel services with us, and she just spontaneously began shouting praises to God. She was seated way back over there. Well, I like that. I joined her. I think that improvised moment of taking the inbreaking joy and just let it bubble over, let the popcorn pop, can be a wonderful thing. You don't want chaos, you don't want to improvise every moment, but there are times for the improvisation. Now, this last theory that I'm going to throw out is the one that I think is the most plausible about Selah. And that is that a Selah, rather than being a pause, time of silence, a swell or crescendo, or a season of improvisation, is an interlude, the musical term interlude. Now, what happens in an interlude in music is that everything changes from one motif to another suddenly. Let's say you're going along in one rhythmic feel. You have one melodic motif that's happening, dominant melodic motif, and another dominant harmonic motif, the chords that are happening. The music has a certain feel. It's become predictable. And when you come to that B section, to that interlude, everything shifts. The rhythmic feel shifts, the dominant melodic motif shifts, and the harmonic motif shifts. And musicologists, if I'm not giving all this in perfect nuance of what an interlude means, please forgive, but I think I'm conveying the general idea. I'm sort of come more from an experience of pop music and jazz, and so I don't have any examples to offer from the classical world. But the primary example that is always given of an interlude in music courses is Dizzy Gillespie's A Night in Tunisia. In fact, what we did, I talked about this series of words a